Welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. One of my guests tonight was a prominent gospel singer and local gay activist in Uganda. After debating an anti-gay minister on national radio, he was kidnapped, tortured, and beaten by Ugandan security forces, then dumped on a roadside bleeding and unconscious. His crime? Being gay in Uganda and talking about it on national radio. A passing motorist picked him up, and after weeks in a hospital, Danny was finally well enough to flee to neighboring Kenya, and with the help of my other guest tonight, eventually made it to the San Francisco Bay Area. It was a long and difficult ordeal, and yet he's one of the lucky ones, alive to tell his tale and happy to have made it to San Francisco, where he now feels safe. Danny Dyson, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you, Eric, and thank you, listeners, for listening to us.
Yeah, thanks for being here to share your story, which we'll hear more of right after I introduce our other guests. Also with us this evening are Avi Rose, Executive Director of Jewish Family and Children's Services of the East Bay, which helped Danny resettle here in the Bay Area. Welcome, Avi.
Thank you.
And Neil Grungras, founder and executive director of the Organization for Refuge, Asylum, and Migration, which helped get Danny safely and legally from Kenya into the United States. Welcome, Neil.
Thank you. It's good to be here again.
Yeah, I should mention Neil was here about 3 years ago. We'll talk a little bit more about how the organization has changed since then. I want to spend the next few minutes, though, hearing more of your story, Danny.
Okay.
Before your horrifying experience in 2009, you were already a local gay activist in Uganda, right?
Yeah, but I was doing it on a low profile because back in Africa or Uganda, where I come from, being gay, they see you as crazy, mad, or bewitched. So the usual life we live in is a bit, you can't really just come out just like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was doing activism with an organization called Spectrum Uganda Initiatives, which we began. And felt we had to support each other as LGBTI people.
So how did you do your activism? You found each other, but you couldn't really be obvious about it in any way to the public eye.
Exactly. And I was also doing gospel music by then. I was really into the church and working with the church. And I had a friend of mine called Father Anthony, the one we were working with. So we are fully in it, working with the church. And so I used to do activism on a low profile, not until in 2009 when I was, you know, ousted and I was listed as one of the
main. This is by a newspaper or some
media
organization.
Yeah, that was, you know, after some anti-evangelicals who came from the U.S. came to the Uganda. So they came with an agenda to crack down the gay community. So they used the media, journalists, anti-gay pastors, and some other people to just name out. They would just put your name, your address, and what you're doing, your career, and that was it. You can imagine a place whereby you're living in fear, and then the media is really doing that to you.
So, sounds a little bit reminiscent of the U.S. in the 1950s.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was the life, you know. So I was a gospel singer, but also helping with the LGBTI community on a low profile. Not until when I was ousted. The media did a story about me and a Catholic priest that we are lovers, and it was all over the media. It became a scandal in Uganda. So that
but
was
you
the time.
Lovers, right?
So that was the time I felt I had to do activism.
Okay.
And I came out and said, okay, this is who we are. We are black, Ugandan, and gay, and stop intimidating us or killing us. We are also human beings, and we feel we are like, even our governments are not protecting us. Yeah.
So, and that this priest you were talking about, he was the gospel singer that you were backing
up,
right?
Yes, he was a prominent big star in Uganda and a Catholic priest.
And you were not lovers, though.
We were not lovers.
Yeah.
We were just doing music together. We were like music partners. But the media made it an issue, and they did the story that I was a lover to the priest. And it was all over news. So the thing was that was a time I felt like this is the time to do activism and do it fully and educate Africans that you can be white, black, Chinese, and gay, you know. And I was trying to tell them that we are Ugandan, black, and gay. We are not copying the Western culture, because where I come from in Africa, especially Uganda, being gay, they see you as someone who is copying the Western culture. So I was trying to say, no, we are not copying the Western culture. This is who we are.
So what led up to this radio appearance in 2009? How did you happen to be invited to be on this show?
I happened, after being named in one of the newspapers, I was like, I told my friend the priest that enough is enough. We've been intimidated enough. We've been threatened enough. So I told him, I am coming out to do something. So one day there was a friend of mine. He was a journalist working with a radio called Vision Radio. So he was like, I would like to invite you, and you're going to be on the gay side, and the anti-gay minister is going to be on the anti-gay side. I was on the gay side. He's on the anti-gay side. So but he never told me that it was the anti-gay minister.
And was this minister someone that you'd already knew?
I knew him as a minister, but I didn't know that we were going to be guests with him in the studios. I thought he's someone else.
Okay.
You know, so right there, as entered in the studio, like the way we came in the studios, I realized I see the minister, and then the journalist is like, "Oh, okay, I forgot to tell you, Mr. Nsababuturo is going to be on the anti-gay side, and you're going to be on the gay side." I was like, "Okay."
How did the interview go? This is a call-in show, right? Didn't you get a lot of reactions?
Yes, exactly.
What kind of reactions did you get from listeners?
It was a call-in show, and it was a hot show because it was like people were calling and were like, how dare you bring a homosexual and a minister in the studios? But I was like, I felt that was a time to be strong and do something, you know, and talk for the minority, you know, and talk for the LGBTI community. By then. So that was it. We were on the program and they were asking me questions, and I was trying to educate them about things, you know, about homosexuality. Because back where I come from, being gay it's a crime. You're in prison 14 years if you're proved that you're gay, or if you're caught in the act.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're imprisoned for 14 years. That is the law. It was a law that was brought out by the British, our former colonialists. They brought that. So that's it. You know, here in the U.S., it's like, you know, you can live who you are. You have the freedom. But there, it's different. Many African countries, it's different. It's a crime to be gay or practice homosexuality.
And we're going to talk with Uganda, more specifically about some of the laws a little later, too. So what happened after you left this interview?
After I had spoken on radio, after the program was done, I went home. You know, in Africa, we use motorcycles as our means of transport. So I was on a motorcycle going back home. So they
sort of like a taxi. You have someone else driving you, right?
It's like a taxi, but it's a motorcycle.
Right. Okay.
So as I'm going back on my motorcycle, there was a car that was running behind us. It came out in front of us, and some men went out and came out of the car, and they pointed a gun again and said, you have some questions to answer. We are the security. You know, we are the police. We've been sent by the government to ask you some questions. So I was like, who are you? I don't know you. They said, we are security agents from the government. So, and I was like, but what are you doing? So they pinpointed me the gun on my head. They started beating me and kicking me. And I was screaming, and they said, you are going to tell us everything today. So they put me in the car. They took me to a place I didn't know. And they said I had insulted the minister, that who is behind me, who is forcing me to be a rebel. And they said, I'm a rebel. I'm fighting the government. And I said, I'm not a rebel. I don't know what you're talking about. They said, does the priest have guns? I said, the priest doesn't have guns. No, he's just helping us as gay people. And I was just talking, you know, for the community, for the LGBTI community, because our government is not protecting us. And they said, we are going to kill you. I was tortured for days, beaten and harassed. I became very sick of malaria. But one of the men knew me. He had seen me perform on television or stage. So he was like, I know who you are. That was after days. I was very sick. They threw me somewhere. It's a long story. They threw me somewhere. By luck, a good Samaritan took me to the hospital. I was there for 2 weeks. And then when I got better, I had to leave for my life because they threatened to kill me.
Right.
So,
right.
And then I crossed the border, went to Kenya. Mm-hmm. And then it's another long, long story. But I ended up in the refugee camp in the north of Kenya somewhere. And then I left the refugee camp and was living somewhere in Mombasa. It's near the Indian coast somewhere, in a remote place somewhere mm-hmm. there. I just wanted to leave Uganda. I left Uganda to start a new life there.
And you basically just had to leave all your stuff behind and just go.
I left everything. I lost everything. I had lost my career in music. I had lost my family. I had lost everything, you know. So, and I had been ousted, or I had been, you know, you understand what I mean? Because it's that they are seeing you as someone who is insane, crazy, or mad, or bewitched. So I couldn't live anymore in Uganda, so I decided to leave, you know, for the safety of my life and, you know.
And is it easy to get from Uganda to Kenya, or was that a problem?
Crossing the border is not easy because you have to go through immigration, but I managed to go through it because there's a time the immigration people are not very... You can cross the border because Kenyans can cross the border and go to Uganda, and the Ugandans can also go on the other side. So there was a time that the guests, the soldiers were not there, or the police, so I crossed. And when I crossed, I went on a bus. I went to Nairobi, and then I went to UN, and then UN took me to a refugee camp in the north of, you know, Kenya somewhere.
Okay.
But I had to leave the refugee camp because it was also hard for me.
And the refugee camp was also quite anti-gay, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So. Some Somali extremists, you know, go to Nam Gay, they threatened me. One day I found all my things thrown out. Rain had poured on my things. I was abused every day. So it was hard for me. So I had to leave the refugee camp. And then a friend of mine from Australia who knew that I was in the refugee camp, he's an Australian who has been a long-time friend of mine. He sent me money, and he told me, oh, Danny, you will die in the refugee camp. I'll send you money, you leave the refugee camp. So I left the refugee camp and went to Mombasa and rented a small room. I started life there. I just wanted to start life in a new place whereby nobody knew me. But I was also in danger because it's like moving from danger to danger. But I realized I was much more safer in Kenya because not so many people knew me.
Right.
Yeah.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, Gay Radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen, and my guests are Danny Dyson, a gospel singer who fled from Uganda in 2009, Neil Grungras, founder of ORAM, the Organization for Refuge, Asylum, and Migration, which helped Danny get safe legal passage to the U.S., and Avi Rose of Jewish Family and Children's Services of the East Bay, which helped Danny settle here in the Bay Area. So Avi and Neil, I want to turn to you two and ask how you got involved in this, in Danny's resettlement.
Well, Danny does have a long story, and part of it is that he connected, when he was in Kenya, he connected with a woman who was working for Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which is a longtime international refugee resettlement agency that we're affiliated with. And she helped him, and she helped him with the process of seeking refuge in the United States. So we found out about Danny at some point in the process. And we are a longtime refugee resettlement agency. We've been doing it for decades with different groups of people and at that point had been preparing to offer services specifically to LGBT refugees coming through. And we got involved with that effort mostly because of Neil, who's also here and kind of recruited us into the effort.
And Neil, can you tell us, you know, how typical is Danny's experience? I mean, there must be huge numbers of gay and lesbian people all over the world that are trying to escape some sort of persecution and death threats and so on.
There are millions. Most don't succeed to get out of their home countries. So people like Danny are actually very rare because they're brave enough to make that move. Most LGBT people know that if they cross a border into an unknown country, they may be as persecuted there as they were back home. Actually, there are probably hundreds of people like Danny in the world who are actually waiting for resettlement in some area. Most LGBT people will stay at home until they know that they can go somewhere that's absolutely safe, like fly directly to the U.S. or to England or somewhere else where they apply for asylum. Many times they're caught in transit countries for many, many years, sometimes for decades. So in that way, Danny's also incredibly lucky.
Mm-hmm. And also sometimes it is hard when you are in the refugee camp or you are in that country, you're trying to get asylum because you're afraid actually to even say that I'm gay. You mm-hmm. feel like they'll reject you, you know.
And as Neil, you told me before, I think you were on Out in the Bay about 3 years ago, and we talked at that time about the difficulty of establishing, you may have a legitimate case for asylum based on being gay or lesbian, but you're so used to denying that you make up some other reason for having fled the country, and then the officials don't believe you because they think, oh, you're just making this up because we didn't believe your other lie.
Yeah. Many times officials don't know how to tell. And they're confused. A lot of officials really lack training. So they look for things that match their stereotypes about what's going to be, let's say, gay. So they look for someone who's gay acting according to their stereotype. Mm-hmm. And if you're hiding the fact that you're LGBT, you're not going to act in that way. And you're certainly not going to feel safe coming out to somebody who's a stranger. The vast majority of people don't come out in that process.
Now, you mentioned before you were working with mostly Iranians. Is that correct?
That's right.
And maybe one other country when the organization first began?
In Turkey.
Turkey, okay. And what were the transit... But typically, you said that transit country is a country where someone will go to sort of have a temporary thing while they go somewhere else. Were there typical transit countries? Or are there still today?
There are. There are a few countries where LGBT people will escape to. And there really aren't many, because what you need is a country that's relatively safe next to a country that's not safe, right? And a country where you can survive economically. Mm-hmm. Kenya is a country like that for Ugandans. South Africa is probably the largest destination in the world for LGBTI mm-hmm. Africans. And Turkey is a large destination for mm-hmm. Iranians and Afghanis.
Mm-hmm. So, Avi, let's talk about how the Jewish Family and Children's Services of the East Bay, which was already helping refugees and immigrants, how and why did you launch a program specifically to help LGBT mm-hmm. refugees?
Well, as we became aware through Neil's efforts at raising people's awareness of this issue of that there were LGBT refugees stuck in the system, and there was a need for local refugee resettlement agencies to get involved in the effort. And it seemed like, you know, we have this long history, we have the capacity, we are an LGBT friendly and involved agency. We're in the Bay Area. There were a number of factors. It was kind of like, if not us, then who? Even though the Bay Area is difficult economically, obviously, for refugees to come to, it's hard, especially for a single adult coming for the kind of cash assistance you get. It's not easy to manage in the Bay Area. But there are reasons why we saw ourselves as good candidates for the effort, and we were mm-hmm. proud and really glad to help Danny, and we've been waiting for we've helped some other folks, some of whom did come on other bases and did not come out in the process but came here as political refugees or what have you. And then there are people who are waiting, but they get stuck in the process, and it's very difficult to tell why they get stuck or for how long they're going to get stuck or if they're ever going to get here. There's someone we're expecting who we just recently heard unofficially is going to arrive in the middle of next month.
Okay.
But we really we won't know that for sure until about a week before he arrives.
Yeah, you mentioned when we spoke on the phone earlier this week that you had maybe three people sort of in progress or in process, but you don't know when they're going to actually arrive.
That's right.
Must be really hard to plan for.
It's really hard to plan, but we will spring into action whenever. But part of what the effort requires is mobilizing a group of volunteers who can help. And so doing that on very short notice is sometimes a hard thing to do. We usually, like I said, we do a lot. We resettle a lot of refugees. Most people come with families, not as single adults. Most refugees, right. Or a lot of refugees are coming to family. They're coming to relatives who are already settled in the Bay Area or to communities of people who are already here. Now, for LGBT refugees fleeing a homophobic society, you know, seeking refuge and support and assistance from that community is not a possibility.
Right.
So they come here. So there's this huge need for agencies like ours and LGBT and allied communities to step up and to help people with the many tasks that are associated with building a new life here. It's pretty daunting. Danny has been fantastic and has done really well, but it's not
easy. Seems
very
resourceful. but seriously, Danny, what were the most difficult challenges, or what are still some of the most difficult challenges for you?
Being here
in a new country here. When you first got here, I mean, what was that like to arrive here? And
well, first of all, you have the culture shock, because this is America, it's the Western world, so many things. It's different worlds, Africa, America. So it's like moving from Africa to US, you know. First of all, I had challenges with the food, the weather, the language, all those things, you know. But you know LGBT people are really, they are really strong people. You go through a lot in your life that the experiences you go through, they mold you. They try to make you stronger. So for me, when I moved in this country, everything was really different. But I had to try, you know, even the English. I never knew how to speak English, but I'm trying to learn English. So many challenges you meet, but so far, the thing is, I got my freedom. Freedom is important, you know. I remember one time I went to D.C. and a journalist asked me, Danny, what have you achieved since you arrived in the U.S.? And I said, freedom I have achieved. Because you can imagine living a life whereby you're afraid of your life every day. You know, you can imagine. It's not only Uganda. People, so many countries in the world where LGBT people face, you know, persecutions, discrimination, hate. So for me, when I came to the U.S., wow, life changed for me. I'm happier and, yeah.
What can you tell us, Neil or Avi, about how many countries in the world, and I don't know why I'm excluding you, maybe know this too, Danny, how many countries in the world is it a crime to be gay or lesbian? And how many is it a capital offense?
There are 77 countries where it's criminal to either engage in same-sex acts or to attempt to engage in. There are 7 countries that apply the death penalty, or that at least have the death penalty on the books. But most of the persecution of LGBT people actually happens by private individuals, where the governments look away, so the government's not protecting the person. And it's better to look at this in terms of numbers of people, because the number of countries is daunting enough, but about half of the world population lives under conditions where LGBTI people are persecuted for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm. Avi, tell me, you mentioned the need for places and families. You're pretty much actively looking for volunteers and potential host families, right, or hosts.
Right. And Neil's organization has done this as well. Volunteers are needed for all the ways of, you know, accompanying people to appointments, helping them navigate systems, figuring out benefits, transportation, getting oriented to things like ATMs and cell phones and, you know, whatever. There's just so many details of life. But the biggest issue, the most complicated and the most expensive issue, is housing. And that's certainly, and it's particularly true in the Bay Area. And so people are arriving usually with few resources and limited income, and it takes a while to get up and running and work in terms of English language and vocational skills and everything. So having people step forward who can offer housing, ideally some kind of in-law unit that has privacy, where someone will be welcome and safe and would be able to pay a very, very modest rent until they can get up and running financially on their own, is a huge need. And it hasn't been an easy one to meet, so we're very open to anyone listening who would be interested in providing that.
And it's particularly tough because obviously in many ways this is the most logical place, one of the most logical places in the U.S. for a gay person to resettle to, and yet it's one of the most expensive, and I guess the same would be true for New York.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And is there a particular program? In some of the articles I was reading, it talked about California being sort of a designated destination. And what is the U.S. government doing? Have they changed some of their immigration policies to make any of this any easier? You've got 2 minutes to answer that.
There's definitely a willingness and much more openness to the topic. The only concrete change that's been made is that the form that refugees can fill out on their way into the country when they're being interviewed allows people to volunteer that they're LGBTI in the comments field. Otherwise, you're not asked that question. There are policies now under development, and it looks like in the next few years we'll get ahead with that. But the biggest need by far now was the one that Avi was mentioning. It's for communities to step forward and for people to offer housing and to really get involved in receiving the refugees.
I think the other change is that for the people who are brave enough or have circumstances that allow them to come out in the process and can be identified as such in the refugee resettlement world, they can be more easily matched up with a program like ours instead of sent to a random program in the middle of Kansas that might not be expecting a transgender person from Iraq, for example.
Great. I'm going to give your websites in just a minute or two. I want to let you know that about two weeks ago, my colleague Marilyn Pittman conducted an interview with Bay Area journalist Edwin Okonga, who was born and raised in Kenya, and it was a lot of it concerned the tradition and laws about homosexuality in Africa, and also got into a little bit about the family, the sort of a conservative extremist based in Washington, D.C., who actually engineered some of the anti-gay laws in Uganda and other countries. So again, look for that on our webpage, outonthebay.com. Our show archives are under Ways to Listen tab. The episode is called Homo Fear in Africa. Again, this is an interview with Edwin Okonga, aired January 3rd on our website, outonthebay.org. I want to thank my guests, Danny Dyson, a gospel singer who fled from Uganda in 2009, Neil Grungras, founder of ORAM, the Organization for Refuge, Asylum, and Migration, which helped Danny get safe legal passage to the U.S., and Abby Rose of Jewish Family and Children's Services of the East Bay, which helped Danny settle here in the Bay Area. You can get more information about ORAM at its website, oraminternational.org. That's oraminternational.org. And about Jewish Family and Children's Services of the East Bay and its refugee and other services at its website, jfcs-eastbay.org. Now, you can learn about and hear some of Danny Dyson's music, which he calls contemporary Christian music for the soul, on his website, which is dandysonmusic.com. That's spelled D-Y-S-O-N, dandysonmusic.com. And instead of our usual theme music tonight, we're going to go out with Danny Dyson singing God Loves You, Be Yourself, and I will have to unfortunately read some of the credits over parts of it. Out in the Bay is supported in part by Perfect Outings Active Epicurean Adventures, offering highly curated small group private tours for discerning travelers. Learn more at perfectoutings.com. If you missed part of our discussion, you can hear the whole program on our website, outinthebay.org. It should be up by 9 o'clock tonight. Have you seen our new website yet? Well, check it out. Yes, podcasts are still free. Downloading the Stitcher app to hear us on your mobile devices is also free. Now you can also hear about a dozen of our favorite shows from our 8 years on the air. Phyllis Lyon and the late Del Martin, who told us about gay life in San Francisco in the 50s. Judy Shepard, Matthew Shepard's mom, talking about his awful murder and how she became an anti-violence activist. Film directors John Waters and Ang Lee. 60s pop singer Leslie Gore. Yep, she was one of us. And a feature on Liberace, glitziest and richest pianist of the last century. And lots more. Just click the plain favorites button on our homepage, outonthebay.com, and let us know what you think of the new site. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KLW, our host station, for studio use and airtime, and tonight's engineer, Joanne Marr. We've been producing Out in the Bay for 8 years. We appreciate your words of support, and we need your financial support, too. We're an independent production. That means we get no money from KLW. We get studio use and airtime. We depend on community support. It's easy and tax-deductible on our website, outinthebay.com. Thank you so much. That's Danny Dyson. You can, again, hear his music to his website, dandysonmusic.com. You've been listening to Out in the Bay. Learn more at outinthebay.org. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.